his motion to suppress evidence stemming from a warrantless probation search of his vehicle that led to the discovery of a backpack, which in turn contained a firearm that he was not legally authorized to possess. The parties agree on the legal standard here, and that is, and the dispute here, is whether the probation officers who conducted the search had reasonable grounds or reasonable suspicion to believe that Mr. Gaston's vehicle contained contraband.
And those are the same reasonable grounds and reasonable suspicion? Is that agreed on?
It's surprising there's such limited case on this, but yes, the parties agree on that. The district court agrees that the terms are synonymous. So our view is that the probation officers did not have reasonable grounds to believe that the vehicle contained contraband and the motion to suppress should have been granted. Now, the Supreme Court, this reasonable grounds standard comes from the probation agreement that Mr. Gaston signed, and that in turn came from the Supreme Court's decisions in the Griffin case and the Knight case. I think it's important to distinguish Mr. Gaston, the probationer, from a parolee. A parolee, the Supreme Court has said, can be subject to warrantless searches without suspicion. But here we're dealing with a circumstance where there had to be an articulable basis for the search. We don't believe there was. So the facts are largely not in dispute, with maybe one exception.
As I understand the government's position, it turns on the officer's understanding of when he asks, is there something in the car that could get you in trouble? And the answer relates to, well, there's my brother's backpack. And the officer's training, the officer's experience, and his interpretation of that was there's something in that backpack.
Sure, and I'm glad you asked that, Judge Smith, because that's the one factual disagreement that the parties have. Officer Warner, who was the more senior of the two probation officers present at the time of the search, testified that he asked Mr. Gaston, is there anything in your vehicle that I should be concerned about, while he was arresting Mr. Gaston for the probation violations. And his testimony was that Mr. Gaston's response was, no, but my brother's backpack is in the vehicle. And as you said, Judge Smith, according to him, that response was suspicious to him because it seemed to him as if Mr. Gaston was disassociating himself from the backpack in the vehicle. We have two responses to that, and one I recognize is difficult because it requires a credibility finding the district court found against us. And the first is that we just don't think that that was the precipitating cause of the search. And we rely on the testimony of the other probation officer, Officer Stransky, who testified that the plan all along was to search Mr. Gaston's vehicle after he was arrested.
What's the interaction of those two things? If the officers are, well, we need to search that car he came in, or one of them has that mentality, but then something arises in the conversation that produces a basis for doing the search apart from perhaps the prior intent to do so. Why would, if there is a reason other than their prior intend to do so, isn't that all that would be required legally?
So I guess our point is that it was clearly erroneous for the district court to find that that was the reason that precipitated the search. Because I think it's far more reasonable that Officer Stransky's position is correct, that they intended to conduct the search.
So what would our review of the decision, of the district court's decision, be? If the district court is looking at this and decides, well, I believe that the officers, that the explanation is the real reason for the search, not the prior intent, what's our review of that determination by the district court?
This court's review of that determination, because it's factual, would be clearly erroneous.
And is it a subjective or objective analysis?
It's an objective analysis, but I do think that the reason stated for the search has to be the reason stated for the search. It can't be a totally post hoc explanation for it. And we think Officer Stransky's explanation was more reasonable because, I mean, as I said in the brief, do you really expect that Officer Warner would have accepted, would have took Mr. Gaston at his word if he just said, no, there's nothing in the vehicle? It doesn't make a ton of sense. And then two, the response isn't really inherently suspicious if you were to assume that Mr. Gaston's brother had a backpack in the vehicle. If he knew that, I think it's natural to say, well, I don't know what's in my brother's backpack, but as far as I know, there's nothing in the vein of contraband in the vehicle. So that, again, the precipitating cause for the search. The government and the district court also relied on Mr. Gaston's criminal history. He was received a deferred judgment for which he was on probation for a shooting-related incident and a robbery that happened in early 2020. The search in question happened in April of 2022.
Are there any other factors that you feel are inappropriate, or are they just collectively insufficient?
The only factual disagreement we have is with respect to the precipitating cause of the search.
Could they have taken into account the video of him being near the shooting incident at the nightclub?
We believe that provides a very good basis for an arrest for a probation violation, but under the circumstances, it did nothing to support reasonable grounds to conduct a search for contraband. And the reason for that is, notwithstanding the fact Mr. Gaston was present at a nightclub on the same night or in the same general time period that the shooting happened, there was no evidence, and the probation officers didn't suspect that he was a suspect in that shooting. He wasn't seen on video doing anything illegal other than being in the bar. He was under 21 years old, and it was after his curfew pursuant to the probation agreement. And again, I think it's important to go back to the language of the probation agreement and the fact that it has to be reasonable grounds to believe that contraband would be present. And the probation violation in and of itself doesn't really move the needle. The more troubling factors for Mr. Gaston are the criminal history and the offenses, for alleged offenses for which he was on pretrial release at the time of the search. But the district court didn't suggest that those two things, the criminal history and the pending charges alone, were enough for a search. The government hasn't made that argument, and the probation officers didn't make that argument. So to summarize our argument, it's that the criminal history and the pretrial release violation or pretrial release status might have provided a hunch that he would always be in possession of contraband, but the probation violation itself and the alleged conversation did not move the needle enough to take it from a hunch to articulable reasonable suspicion, which is what was required here. I see my time is low. I ask to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Hanks. Counsel, would you start right where that ended and address why there's more than a hunch?
Certainly, and I think that's really the fighting issue here. The standard we're talking about here is the particularized and objective basis for suspecting wrongdoing. And so here, the basis in the officer's mind collectively here, but in particular because I believe everything that Officer Stransky knew had effectively been transferred to Officer Warner, is the repeated prior instances involving firearms specifically. So the officers, in particular Officer Warner, who has over 30 years of experience in these situations, he's walking into this situation understanding that we're dealing with someone who has a lot of history of violence and possession of firearms, including repeatedly after situations where he'd been caught with a firearm or charged with a firearm and then immediately thereafter possessing another firearm.
How many times did that happen? Because you said a lot of history. Isn't this he couldn't be in the nightclub, right? So he's under 21. So at least as an adult usher, could you give us a sense of, when you say a lot of history of using a firearm, getting caught, using it again, can you be a little more specific as to what you think is relevant here?
Sure. The prior robbery from 2020, where the defendant used a firearm during that robbery. So that's one use. Then he's on pretrial for an attempted murder with a gun. And I understand that at the time of this, it was an allegation, but he was on pretrial release for that, where, again, as an officer in that situation, understanding that this person has at a minimum been alleged to have been involved in this violent offense that again involved a gun while under supervision for another offense involving a gun, that's certainly something that a reasonable officer could take into consideration. In addition to that, 5 days after the pretrial or the attempted murder with a gun, he's arrested for harassment where he's again brandishing a gun. Same caveat applying that again, these haven't been admitted or proved in court at that point, but certainly a reasonable officer under those circumstances can conclude that this is somebody that I need to be careful with, that I need to be on alert that they may have a gun. And so we're not saying that just a person with criminal history involving firearms, even repeated criminal history involving firearms, is subject to sort of carte blanche search at any time because they may have a gun just because of those things. But the additional facts in this case gave rise to that reasonable particularized suspicion in this instance for investigation.
And what were the additional facts you just referenced? What was that the statement about the backpack?
Primarily the statement about the backpack. Obviously, the fact of being involved or being at the nightclub when there was a shooting, even though there's no evidence at that point or information that he had been involved in the shooting, but his presence there obviously would have been of some concern to them. But that probably doesn't move the needle necessarily as well. But here, in particular, the statement to Officer Warner is the most particularized evidence or information that he had. It's particularized not necessarily as to what might be in the backpack, but again, we're talking about an officer with over 30 years of experience, not just in law enforcement, but in a high-risk unit. If someone who deals with people, probationers, parolees, people who are on supervision, he knows what's happening in this situation. He's seen it over and over and over the course of his career. And so he knows that when someone says something like this, and I want to clarify something that counsel said. He said the disagreement was, the statement by Officer Warner was, is there anything in the vehicle that I should be concerned about? That's not what the record is. The record was, is there anything in this vehicle that's going to get you in trouble? And so that's particularly important here because it's not just that he should be concerned about generally that something might harm him. It's something that's going to get you in trouble. And he says, no, but then there's that backpack that's not my brother's, or that's not mine, that's my brother's. That, in Officer Warner's experience and training, is very particularized that there's something in that backpack that's going to get him in trouble. It's a backdoor admission, so to speak. And so that is reasonable, particularized suspicion that there's contraband in that vehicle, and it gives rise to the ability of the officers under the terms of that agreement to search the vehicle for contraband. There were some questions about the testimony of Officer Stransky versus the testimony of Officer Warner. They are different in the respect that Officer Stransky testifies, obviously, that they intended to search the vehicle. But I believe, as the question elicited here, we are dealing with an objective standard. We are dealing with the facts known to a reasonable officer at the time they committed the search. So prior intent is irrelevant. Officers can knock on a door intending to search eventually, but hoping that they get additional evidence that allows them to write the warrant or get the search. So you can walk into a situation hoping that it will play out in a way that allows you legally to do it, but if those facts don't arise, then you don't conduct the search. And so that's ultimately here. The defense is asking to Monday morning quarterback this thing and go back and say, well, they were going to do it anyway. There's no evidence that that was actually going to happen, because even though Officer Stransky said that's our intent, the more experienced Officer Warner, who was there and was really running the show when it came to interacting with the defendant and performing this search, the more experienced officer said, we're going through this, and he asked that question. It's very clear why he asked that question. It's because he was looking for more particularized something for that vehicle, and he got it. And because the defendants gave that evidence, that information that gave particularized suspicion for the vehicle. And so the district court's finding here, and the magistrate judge that observed the testimony of both of those officers, found them both credible, found Officer Warner particularly credible here, that as far as his basis for the search, that essentially ends the inquiry here. This is the credibility finding by the magistrate judge and the district court. This is not clearly erroneous. Yes, the defense has an alternate, potentially plausible basis or thought process as to what the officers were doing or why they actually did it or something like that. But we're talking about an objective standard here. And the officer, and the court, the district court here found that, and it's not clearly erroneous. This is plainly a reasonable reading of all the facts known to the officers at the time, was that there's going to be contraband in that vehicle.
So if Mr. Gaston had not had the type of prior record with the guns that you've described, would we be in a different situation? In other words, the question, he's on for forgery or something like that. On probation, I apologize. So then the same question gets asked, the same answer gets given. Is it a different case?
Not necessarily, because here we're looking at particularized suspicion of contraband in a particular location, right? So if we're looking at a situation where a probationer, it's always going to depend on the circumstances, right? But a probationer gets asked a question like this one here was, is there anything in that vehicle that's going to get into trouble? Here, the officers were thinking none, most likely. But in another situation with a different individual, there could be a different type of contraband in the vehicle when the person immediately attempts to distance themselves from a very specific object. So I think even in that circumstance, it might be a different type of contraband, but there still could be a reasonable suspicion by the officers. With that, I believe I've covered all the issues I wanted to cover. So if there are no other questions, I will cede the remainder of my time and ask that this court affirm the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harrison.
Thank you. I believe the government conceded in its argument that the criminal history, the pending charges, and the probation violation on their own were not sufficient to amount to reasonable grounds to search for contraband. So it becomes very important how this court interprets the conversation that Mr. Gaston had with Officer Warner. And to be clear, even if the court doesn't want to disturb the credibility finding that the district court made with respect to who was correct, Officer Stransky or Officer Warner, ultimately, it's de novo review to decide whether the facts that the district court found amount to reasonable grounds or reasonable suspicion. And we don't think they do, because again, I don't know what Mr. Gaston could have said that would not have drawn suspicion from Officer Warner if, in fact, there was somebody else's property in his vehicle. That would be the response, and it's not objectively suspicious to say that. However, again, we're dealing with an objective standard. We don't think the district court was correct on the fact finding with respect to Officer Warner versus Officer Stransky. And the bottom line is, even though it is an objective standard, law enforcement can't come up with a post hoc reason to conduct a search. I think it's far more reasonable to believe that Officer Stransky was correct. The plan all along that in bringing in the high-risk unit to effectuate the arrest was to conduct a search afterward.
Did the district court rely on that fact that it was the high-risk unit? Because Warner was a part of that, correct?
He was, yes.
Did the district court rely on that?
I'm not sure the district court relied much on that. Certainly there's mention of it in both the report and recommendation and in the order denying motion to suppress, but I'm not sure it was a huge factor for the district court. If there are no other questions, I ask the court to reverse the ruling. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you also, Mr. Chairman. The court appreciates your participation in the argument before the court. It's a tricky issue. We'll do the best we can with it. Madam Clerk, I believe that concludes our scheduled arguments for this morning.
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
And for the week?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
That being the case, the court will be in recess until further call.